Hello, welcome to Growing Wild. I'm Charlotte Petz and you are listening to Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM, online and on digital. On this month's show, we are talking maps, an entire show about maps. So we're going to hear from Helen Can, who is an illustrator and a map maker. Emily McCauley of This Way Maps. And cartographer Jennifer Johnston of InSpirit Cartography. It's basically map heaven. There's only one song I could play to open the show, and that is, of course, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs and Maps. Maps by Yeah Yeah Yeahs. So, maps. I mean, I love a map. Who doesn't love a map? My knowledge of such things, however, is quite limited, so I decided to make a show about it. I mean, I know OS maps. I think most of us know OS maps and road maps. I've been to a map exhibition, because who hasn't? But there's loads more to it than that, and as I discovered putting this together, they're history-making, they tell stories, they evoke memories, they look good on walls. And I've found three people who all approach their mapping slightly differently. And the first of these three is Helen Can. She's an incredible illustrator and creates beautiful hand-drawn maps. And luckily knows an awful lot about the history of maps as well. So this is a really good place to start. I went to interview her with a stinking cold, but she still let me in into her lounge. I just didn't touch anything, or as little as possible. So this is us in her lounge. And I began by asking her what it was that drew her to the world of maps.
I remember seeing maps in books when I was a kid, and end papers of things like The Hobbit or Winnie the Pooh, and just being absolutely fascinated by them. And they're always done by hand, and quite often by the authors, actually. So Tolkien did all those maps in the beginning of The Hobbit.
Mm. Mm.
And I just really like them.
That's a very good reason.
I'm also quite fascinated by the names of places and how names of roads or the names of settlements show so much about the place where those settlements are, or the people that used to live in the settlements. So you can look at a map and have layers and layers of stories from the people that lived there just by the names that you read on the maps.
How does that work?
So, for example, there might be an area, and I'm just making it up off the top of my head now, but an area in the town called Rocky Bottom, or Pool Valley, for example, in Brighton. There used to be a huge pool there, which was, once the old river was boarded over, that pool no longer exists, but the name exists, so you still have something of the history of the town shown in the names of the streets.
Does that make you want to dig around? Do you go back to the old maps and see what they were like?
Totally. Where,
yeah.
I just think they're fascinating, and you can see names changing. And I know at the beginning, when OS maps started to be spread out around the world, around the country, they sent teams of men out and talked to the locals to find out what the places were called and the spellings. And sometimes they got the spellings wrong. And we still use those incorrect spellings now, because they were never corrected.
That's, I think, really
interesting. Yeah, it's fascinating.
So it's just made up.
Yeah,
it's not even the real name. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the history of maps.
Really?
Yes, I would. Yes. So the first maps we had, I found this quite interesting, because I've read a little bit about what you said before, and it's not that the men or the people were any less intelligent than us. They just didn't have the tools available mm-hmm. that we do now. Mm-hmm. So the first maps that were drawn weren't of the land, is that right? And they were more of the sky.
There were some maps of the land. I think ancient Babylonian maps, they've mapped, there are drawings of a city. So you can see roads and houses, and they were just drawn onto stone. But if we're talking about cave art, that was all about the natural world, and obviously they didn't have roads and houses. And if you go to the Lascaux caves in France, you can see images on cave walls, which are basically pictograms, and they're picturing stars as animals or characters on the walls. So you can look at the picture, read it as a map, and then look up at the sky and work out how the pictures relate to the stars.
Wow.
It was really fascinating.
And that's what they were doing in the caves, that was how they started doing it. Mm. And then what happened? How has it progressed? Big question, sorry. But how have we got from that to being progressively just... I think this is one of the... Isn't Britain one of the best mapped countries in the
world? Oh, that's interesting, I didn't know that.
That's what I'd heard.
Okay. Possibly because of the OS maps.
Yeah.
That's a huge question.
I'm sorry.
I guess it's people trying to understand where they live. And people map for lots and lots of different reasons. And that might be for information, so they can share different things about where they live with other people in their tribe. Or it may be that I've got that information, but I'm not going to give it to you. So therefore you have power, so maps can be used for power, and it can show boundaries, and this part is my land, that part's your land. So a lot of ancient Egyptian maps show areas of farming, which is really fascinating. So obviously farmers could indicate to others, this is mine and that's yours. And to survive, really. So maps to show where the good fishing was, or...
I find it interesting that the maps, it can be about, it is a very powerful tool, and it is used for power and kind of dominance, and during wars they get used a lot, don't they, to map out new territories and
it's amazing how often boundaries change. And I think because we're on an island and our boundaries really haven't changed for centuries, and that might change in the next century for us, who knows, but we're not used to it. But for other countries, it's a yearly occurrence sometimes. I mean, even somewhere like Bosnia, I think they're still talking about where the boundaries of Bosnia actually are.
I know that you're a big fan of when people draw, create a map, it's kind of like the human story that comes with that. And you get to know the cartographer that's drawn it as well, created it, and you really see their personality come through. I've got a cat in the background just having a scratch. How do you see the personality of the person come through a map?
When I first left university, I worked in a print shop that sold lots and lots of 17th century maps, and that was a kind of high point of map making. And what I really loved about it was that you could tell the difference between one map maker and another by his handwriting, because obviously everything was written by hand. And as just as you could tell the difference between my handwriting and your handwriting, that kind of personality comes through. And by the way he was drawing, and the sensitivity of the line that he was using, and the kind of information that he was putting down. So every time somebody hand draws a map, they've edited it and curated what they've seen. They've decided what's important enough to put in the map. So for a GPS map, it's very bland, and it all looks pretty homogeneic, and you're not really sure who's mapped it, what's important to them. Probably roads, maybe that's the thing. But every hand-drawn map, if I was particularly interested in ice cream, for example, in all of my maps I would probably mark every place that I could buy ice cream, because I think that I would think that that's very important. So that's why every hand-drawn map is individual to the map maker themselves.
And that's true of even these maps that were being made Of course. Just to map a town, they would highlight the bits that they liked best.
Or were most important.
Most important.
And it might be to do with their patron and what their patron thought was important, in which case you would put down the patron's borders or stately homes or whatever.
So in that way, do they almost write history a little bit?
Of course.
I've just made that. Because some stuff just would never have been documented if the map maker wasn't that interested in it.
Exactly.
Wow. So it's a huge part of history.
Yes. But that's why they're so fascinating, and that's why the GPS maps, perhaps their history in that they show history in themselves, and what was important was technology and being able to use your car, perhaps. And you certainly can't see the personality of the map maker on those digital maps at all.
Well, what are some of the projects you've done?
I did a map of the history of coffee, which was really interesting, in the City of London area, where there were lots of old coffee shops in the 18th century, so Isaac Newton time, and it was a time when people would use coffee shops as information sharing spots, and there might be a coffee shop which specialised in science, or a coffee shop that specialised in astronomy or maths, and all the experts would go to the coffee shops and talk about their subject matter and drink lots of coffee. So it's fascinating.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Mm. You must just learn so much all the time.
I'm a geek. Basically, I'm just a geek.
But how brilliant. You're getting paid for, geeking out and all this stuff.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah, really interesting.
I think so you can think of the word map and you literally just think of it as a road map or an OS map. And you're like, yeah, fine. It's just a geographical piece of information. And it's so much more than that.
Not at all, yeah. I did a map. There's we're sitting in my room and there's a map of a flight of a bat that I did a few years ago, which I used some scientific information from Sussex Wildlife Trust, and it was just a list of all of the trees and flora in that area. And these bat flight journeys have been the same for centuries, they reckon. So always along this one stretch of the river. That was really fascinating because then I'm mapping from streets and houses, but the landmarks are different. The landmarks are trees and where the bats roost or where the bats get food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, because other animals would have a totally different way of mapping around using different senses.
Exactly.
I want your job. This is really fun.
For the bat map, I discovered there were millions of words, Sussex dialect words for mud, which is brilliant because who knew that Sussex had so much mud? It's a little bit like the Inuits and their thousands of words for different types of snow. Well, clearly, Sussex people also had lots of words for different types of mud.
Do you remember any of them?
I think I've written them down.
Oh, great. Let's have a look at the map.
There's some of the words. Known for over 30 words. Clodgy, swank, stud, pug, gorm, gubber, ike, sloth.
Sloth. Those are wonderful. Swank, stud, pug, gubber. I love that.
Yeah. And I have no idea what type of mud that was, but it's just this idea that we've lost all of those words. We don't really use any of them. It's just lots and lots of echoes. Echoes of people that are shown in maps. And in this case, it's through the eyes of a bat.
A bat map. I mean, it's a thing of beauty, as is actually all of her work. So I would really recommend you having a look. Her website is helencan.co.uk. It's double N in Can. I believe she's got some stuff down at Onco Gallery as well here in Brighton. Yeah, I feel I kind of naively stumbled my way through that interview, and I genuinely hadn't made that realisation of just how much maps make history. And I became quite, and it's really fascinated me, and I'm really intrigued now to see how different map makers would map the same area. And that's something I'm probably just going to turn out to massively be geeking out on maps, even more so than before after having made this show. We'll have a song next, and then we're going to hear from Emily McCauley of This Way Maps. But this is The Passenger by Iggy Pop.
I ride through the city.
That was Iggy Pop and The Passenger. That remains to be one of the three songs I can almost play on the guitar. You're listening to Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM, online and on digital. I am Charlotte Petz, and this is Growing Wild. Next up, we have Emily McCauley. She and her pal, Felicity Rowley, have created a beautiful thing called This Way Maps. They're route maps that they've designed for walks in various places across the country. I'll let her explain it. She explains it much better. So I met with Emily up on the Downs out by Kingston by Lewis to do a portion of one of the walks that they've mapped. It was a beautiful sunny day, and as we've had a few of those this month. It's been rather lovely. So here's Emily explaining to me more about what This Way is.
Yeah, so This Way is a map-making project in, like, its most basic form. And we made a number of maps, but we didn't necessarily intend to at the start. It was always kind of a bit of an experiment, in that I don't know if we necessarily thought we were going to make a map-making company. Okay. We thought we were going to practice with a map from Brighton and a route that we knew, with the idea that we'd do a long-distance route that would come in a book and stuff. And the map was only an experiment to see if we could design our own maps. And then accidentally we fell in love with it and created lots of maps and routes across the country. So the majority of our time is actually spent finding those routes, so just going out and hiking and spending time outdoors and finding places that we love to walk to recommend to other people.
Okay, and how did you come to want to do that? I mean, have you got a background in cartography?
No, absolutely not. I'm a graphic designer, so my, like, day job is graphic design and bookbinding and creating graphic design-y type things, and Felicity is massively creative and does all that kind of stuff too. And I think me and Felicity, we kind of, like, were meeting up once a week because we wanted to do something together. Like, she's massively creative and has these amazing ideas, and we were talking about projects, and actually our conversation kept on coming back to where we'd hiked at the weekend and the routes that we went on, and that kind of started the project.
That's how the best ideas come about, though, right? When you're trying to think of something, and actually it's the thing that you're not thinking about that keeps popping back up. It's like, oh, we need to pay attention to that.
Yeah, we were really desperately trying to come up with this other project, and we kind of experimented with a few different things. And all our conversation was always, oh, you want to go hiking here or in this country, or have you been on this route, or I went hiking here at the weekend. And I think around the same time, me and my boyfriend were hiking a bit more in Sussex, and maybe a few of our friends were asking us a little bit more for, like, route suggestions for the weekend. And I think all these things kind of collided into the project.
Okay, how long ago did it start?
I would kind of guess, like, 4 or 5 years ago, the kind of the hiking.
The seed of the idea.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
And we're launching our third main map when the clocks change this year. So it would be kind of just over 3 years since we started the project properly.
Okay. And how long does it take then to... So you said the most amount of time is actually going, is finding the route.
Yeah.
So how long does that sort of thing take from kind of conception to an actual map being there? How much time do you have to put into that?
It really, really varies. So we have different kinds of maps. Some of them are trail mail ones, which are shorter route suggestions. They're much shorter, and we can usually do it in a trip or two. So we'll go to the location, figure out that it's a nice place to hike, maybe do the route once and then go back and test it properly and then come back and map it, which doesn't take very long at all. The data mainly exists, so there's lots of open source mapping stuff, so it's just a case of converting that and illustrating it ourselves. But the main amount of time is going and checking that the footpaths are where they say they are and that the route is actually a nice one and you're not going to encounter private woodland or stuff like that. the longer maps that we do, so ones like our Brighton to Lewes one, they take a bit longer because they're longer routes. You kind of need to test more of the footpaths, and there's a number of points of interest. So we have multiple things, stories that we want to research. And,
okay. Oh, so yeah. That's all included as well? You do little bits of local knowledge and things?
Yeah. We like to think that they're the more boring and unusual tourist attractions.
Okay, such as? Between Brighton and Lewes, what have you highlighted on the way?
So some of them are really personal things. So when
the Brighton... Like and stuff. Wild wee spot over
this
here.
Is a really good spot. It's private.
It's important to know that sort of thing.
It is very actually important. Yeah. So one of the ones that I always think about with the Brighton map, because that was our first one, was actually just over the hill from here, in between Brighton and Lewes, there's this valley, and in summer the crops grow, and you are sometimes the one responsible for cutting the path, and you kind of walk through the crops and they're kind of up to your knees, and it was just a really lovely experience that both me and Felicity had separately, and we've put that on the map as like you have to go there at specifically the right time of year, which neither of us could remember the exact date, but it was just this really nice shared experience that we both had separately. So those kind of things are on there. Lewes bonfire.
Yes,
classic.
Of course. Yes.
So that is a big thing that's publicised, and it's in all the newspapers, but that's a kind of classic thing for this area.
Yeah, and just where we were a moment ago and how we're on a ridge and the view that you can get of Lewes bonfire if you kind of go on this walk, and that's nice to know, things like that. Yeah. Although you probably don't want to highlight that too much.
Yeah.
Like, get off my ridge.
Yeah. But yeah. And in Brighton, instead of the sorts of things that you'd usually find lots of information about, the I-360 and things like that, the stuff that we love there is the starlings. Like, that is an absolute thing that if you're in Brighton at the right time and you can see that, then that's the kind of thing that we want people to experience.
Yeah, so it's more focused in on the nature highlights rather than the sort of touristy building attractions or shopping. Or things like that.
The stuff, I guess, that has a bit of longevity to it, so that isn't going to change in the next 10, 20 years. If there's some geological structure, that's the best thing for us, or some folklore or a ghost story. They're the things that we love the most.
I love that. Let's walk a little bit.
One of my favourite things in Brighton actually is along the undercliff. There's almost nothing left of it now. In between the marina and Rottingdean, there used to be the Daddy Long Legs, which all that remains of it now is these kind of concrete sleepers when the tide is out. But it used to be a train, a bit like the Vault Railway, that was on stilts. And it used to go through the water. I don't think it lasted very long.
It didn't. I read about that because it's ludicrous. It's an electric railway in the sea.
But it's absolutely brilliant.
The pictures of it, I love it. It's just these faces hanging out of a carriage and in the sea. Like, what are you doing?
It's always illustrated in nice calm seas. But I like those little remnants of something that it was only when someone told me about that I knew about it. And it makes walking along the undercliff just a little bit more interesting. So those are the kind of things we're looking for all over the country.
So tell me about the different types of maps. You've got the bigger maps with all of the lovely kind of suggestions on there and the longer routes. But then you mentioned trail mail.
Yeah. So the bigger maps have a longer route. Usually they have two routes and more information about the area. And the idea is that you might do a few different things, and they contain all the footpaths in the area. So you might create your own route from that map as well, which we would love if people were going off our routes and discovering their own stuff. And then trail mail was something we set up a year and a half ago. And they're shorter routes, and they come as a subscription, so we post them to people every month. And they're based all across the UK. And our idea was that we want people exploring all these different places. So me and Felicity are a little bit selfish in the way that we design stuff, in that we design stuff for each other. So going back to what I was saying before, Felicity always used to recommend, oh, you should go here hiking, you should go to Scotland, or I'd suggest places in the Lake District. And that's essentially trail mail for other people, that we've gone on some routes and you don't necessarily know where to head to for a hike. But trail mail, we're hoping means that people have a starting point to go and explore the Lake District. And essentially people subscribe and get one each month.
Okay, that's nice. It's sort of like a little aim for the month to go off and do whichever walk pops through the post.
Yeah, and we're hoping that even because they're based across the UK, it's not... Almost, that would have been good.
That'd be good. No, chalk, wet chalk is deadly.
Both of us falling over. Yeah, we're hoping, because the walks are sometimes quite far away from the place the person is based, that even if they don't get to do the walk that month, because you'd have to be travelling everywhere and have a lot of spare time on your hands, that it either inspires a walk, it just reminds you to get outdoors and go hiking where you are, or that you put it on a to-do list if it looks interesting for the future.
I'm out of breath already.
I'm going to go up this one slower if I've got to talk.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Avoid that chalk bit. Yes, because it's not like you come from sort of a cartography background. Has it extended your love for the world of maps, kind of getting involved into it? Have you found that you're trying to find old stuff and, you know, being a bit more interested in that world?
Yeah, I've always loved maps, like since I started trying to plan longer routes, kind of 5 or 6 years ago, really wanting to open up the Sussex countryside around where I was living. And I remember having a conversation with someone that said they hated maps because they found that it restricted. It was like bossing them around, you have to stay on this footpath. And I've always found the complete opposite, and I've discussed this with Felicity, that we think it opens up a place. So if I don't have a map of an area, I don't know where a footpath leads to, so I'm not necessarily going to take it. And I find that a map shows you the limitless possibilities of moving through a landscape. So a real appreciation of that.
It's a different way of looking at maps there, because I know that some people can find maps quite restrictive and decide to not bother and just head out, but actually they can lead to sort of more freedom. That's an interesting idea. So that was Emily McCauley of This Way Maps. You can find her work, her and Felicity's work, at this-way.co. And I get these maps delivered. I think they're beautiful things, and you can just feel the love that they put into them, and that focus on telling the stories and the folklore of a place. You get these little lovely stories along with all of your maps as well, and it's a beautiful way of looking at the landscape that you're travailing. Okay, we're going to have a song, and then we're going to hear from a cartographer, Jen Johnston. But first, we'll have this song by Maps and Atlases, called Solid Ground.
When I slept on the solid ground right next to you, and the frost looked like a castle wrapped up in a tin. Stepped on the solid ground near your house.
Solid Ground by Maps and Atlases. So finally we have Jen Johnston. She is a trained cartographer, and kind of actually why I decided to make the show, because I met her at we both go to the same life drawing class, and we ended up having a chat, and I discovered that she was a cartographer, which I found endlessly fascinating. And it was one of those things where we sort of bumped into each other three times in the same week, and I just thought, I should probably pay attention to this, and decided that I should interview her and then create this show about maps. So we went for a little stroll up on the downs as well. It's a bit of a feature this month, and sat up on top of the hills, amongst a lot of skylarks, which are quite chatty. So you'll hear those tweeting away in the background. So this is Jen. I started out by asking her just what it is that she does.
So I do custom mapping. I specialize in custom mapping. So pretty much someone comes to me with an idea for a map, and that's... Or they know what they want to show or what story they want to tell, or they have an idea of what they want it to look like, and I make it.
That's quite
broad. That can encompass yeah. a lot of stuff.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of that's what I like about it. It's every project is strikingly different.
What's the most recent one you did? Give us some examples.
I'll give you three.
Okay.
So the most boring one would be making a map for Hellman's. They've got branches and offices all over the world, and they want they've got pamphlets, and they want it in a particular style and to just show information related to them. So okay. there's one. And then another one would be like two guys in Cuba found me online and said, you know, we've got this bed and breakfast, we've got amazing trails with all kinds of sights to see along the way. We want a map so that our visitors can hop on a bike and do a bit of a cycle tour of the area. So that was really fun because now I really want to go there.
Yeah, so do you not have, you don't have to know the area yourself to do it? It's not like you have, you don't visit and kind of sense it out. Are you,
no,
you're
I
mapping
wish.
From yeah maps that exist
yeah
already. Okay,
well no, I'm mapping from geographical data, satellite imagery, and any local information I can get. So okay. kind of taking information from all kinds of different sources and making something that people can interpret.
And what about the third one?
So the third one, this is the most abstract one. A guy in Alaska found me, and he's a massive Dungeons & Dragons fan, and he has an imaginary world in his head that he wanted mapped with. He has all the distances. He knows how far away two towns are. He wanted everything to be cartographically accurate and geospatially accurate. So he wanted things to be to scale and to be given real-world coordinates.
Wow. How do you even start that? Getting
that,
something from someone's imagination
yeah,
and making
it
that.
Yeah. It was crazy because he knew his imaginary world better than most people know their backyard.
Sure.
It was pretty hard, but it was kind of the challenge that I liked. And it was definitely, you know, extremely creative.
How does one find themselves to be a cartographer?
By accident.
Yeah. So how did it happen for you?
Well, I went to university initially for science, and then I realized I didn't like a single course that I'd be taking. And then I noticed I really liked all the geography and fine arts courses. So behind my parents' back, I switched to geography and fine arts. But then I moved back to Toronto, and I couldn't do anything with that. I was driving a truck illegally. I was slinging coffee, working at a call center. I was just not able to do anything with my degree. So a friend had studied geographic information systems at college. And she said, oh, you should do, there's lots of work in that. All the classes really excited me, and I don't know, I got a job before I even graduated. So it was kind of, everything kind of made sense then, but initially it's like just lost at sea.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot.
Yeah,
I think it's normal. And I think actually that can really help you. I think it's a necessary thing to happen.
Yeah.
Because then you kind of really discover what you actually want.
Yeah.
When you're kind of starting at ground zero.
Yeah. Or just following what you're interested in.
Exactly.
It seems like it will never work out, but in actual fact, you know, all paths lead to somewhere. So
by learning how to create all the maps, have you discovered other people, kind of other people's work that has inspired you? Or
I feel like especially early on there were a lot of people that I admired that I worked with. The funny thing about cartographers is they're typically introverted people, so it's hard to find out about them because they're quiet, you know, people who like to hide away and just do their thing. Actually, a lot of people who are really good for different reasons. Like one particular colleague, when I worked at Lonely Planet, he was really socially aware. So, for example, with the whole Palestine-Israel debate, he was quite good at, 'cause, you know, depending on your client, they have a different perception of the world, and that might not necessarily you might feel a little bit uneasy about whichever side of the fence you should find yourself. And then he was just really good at explaining, you know, you can always use the UN as, you know, and kind of rationalize why you chose to make this map this way and what borders you drew, because this is what the UN upholds, and most people won't have a problem with that.
Yeah, of course, because there's borders that people dispute.
Yeah.
And so you have to be quite cautious, careful.
Yeah, and whose capital belongs to who.
Yeah, and then I suppose you don't want to be affiliated, and you always want, you want to make it clear that's not necessarily your opinion.
Yeah.
Have you had to not do jobs and things for those sorts of reasons?
Well, no. Moving out into freelancing is different because you have to take work.
Mm.
And I had one particular client who was telling me that Newfoundland and Labrador were two different provinces. I was like, no, they're not. They're one province. It's like, no, they are absolutely two different provinces. And at the end of the day, you know, you're making their map. It's not for you.
Mm.
So I was like, well, that's what you want.
That's interesting. But then you've made a little bit of history there.
Yeah.
For someone else to look at that map and be like, oh, there's a border there. I didn't realise.
Yeah.
But that's where I think it's fascinating how cartographers do create history. They have created history along the way.
Like, California was an island for a long time.
Really?
Yeah. That's my holy grail, is to find a map where California's an island. Because that was, for a long time, it was mapped as an island.
Why?
They just thought it was.
Before they'd been there, or?
No, they had been there.
But they
thought it was an island, and map makers would constantly copy each other. So one person made it as an island, so the next person does, next person does, next person does. And then they realize there's actually no body of water. You'd walk to the other coast before.
How funny.
Yeah.
So they just thought, oh, well, someone else has done it. I don't want to be seen as wrong.
Well,
so
it was just taken as that's right. This is a reputable map, but, you know, keep going.
I mean, the history of cartographers is very male, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it feels like, I've only just started digging into this as a subject because I love maps and I just, you know, I wanted to learn more about it. And I've just been fortunate now to meet three women who are working in this realm, but sort of approaching it in quite different ways. And it feels very creative, like quite illustrative, the effect that they've been bringing to the role.
Where modern day mapping is going is it's moving more towards the science side rather than the art. So that's where you are getting computers just spitting things out, and maybe it is women who are more concerned about the art side of things, because definitely when I have been hired, it's been because of the art aspect that I bring. Is, you know, technical is, you know, whatever, we can easily find.
That's the thing. It's done. Like most places are mapped now in a technical way.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, it's more. I guess it's still. You know, what story are you telling? You can't possibly show all the information on one map.
Yeah.
So it's kind of what look, what story. What are you communicating? Because I think people forget that, you know, maps aren't kind of restricted by language. Like, for example, I'm doing some workshops with the British Cartographic Society, and we go into schools and we give these year 9 and 10 students these maps all in Japanese. And the thing is, if a map is done well, they should be able to read them. So it's all using symbology, and so you're not looking for words. You're looking for things that play on your intuition, like what is this, what is that, kind of thing. And it's a language as well. Well, it's a communicative tool, and you know, the thing, especially when I'm doing custom maps, I realize, you know, every style is different. I rarely use the same. Maybe coastlines and things like that I can reuse, but for the most part, everything starts from scratch all over again. I know I was training a team in India in cartographic design for Lonely Planet, and it was interesting to see. We had a team of men and women, and the women were just really good at making a good-looking map. So the men were very good at, like, getting things done and being in a process, but probably our best cartographers who came out of that were women, just because they, you know, they've just got a certain eye.
I don't want to do men down, you know.
No, because they are great job phenomenal.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Especially for accuracy, they're really, really good as far as, you know, the men that I've worked with, I've just found they're far better with numbers and measurements, and accuracy is, they're really good.
Yeah. Do you make maps just for yourself?
Yeah, I
you do.
Yeah.
I wanted to do that as a silly question.
No,
What kind of stuff do you make just for yourself? So if you... Yeah, go on.
Okay, well, I make maps that I want that nobody else wants. Like, yeah. For example, I have this weird fixation with Sitka in Alaska because it's a surf town, and it's in Alaska. It's freezing. Why would anyone go surfing in Alaska? So I just find it really fascinating that a surf culture exists in Sitka, and there's, you know, icebergs and, you know, glaciers and things.
Yeah.
But there's also, so I was thinking, you know, like, how do you get warm? And there's all these hot springs in Sitka as well. So I did a surfing, like all the best surfing spots and all the best hot springs in and around Sitka for myself.
Are you a surfer?
No. I'm a wannabe.
I love that.
Yeah. I just think it's, like, I like weird places that, like, don't really make a lot of logical sense.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I should have said, actually, before that went out, I was going to give you a little brief bio of where she's worked and who she's worked for. And she's worked for the Atlas of Canada, for Lonely Planet, for Explore Australia. And now she has her own business called In Spirit Cartographics. You can find her at inspiritcarto.wixsite.com, and all of her work is there, and she sells maps and clearly makes really interesting stuff as well. So we're coming to the end of the show. I thought when I started out making this show it'd be quite a technical, I'd learn about the technical aspects of that, but what seems to have come through much more than anything else is the personality of the map and the personality of the map maker, and how those are almost like the most important things, and how they've created history. This was such a revelation for me, and I'm going to go off and try and find different versions of the same area mapped by different people, just to see how interpretations were different. And I know that a lot of it came down to who it was that was commissioning the map to be made in the first place. It's piqued my interest. I'd also like to say Helen Can runs workshops, and they look like a great starting point and a wonderful thing to do. You come away with your own hand-drawn map of an area, depending on where she's holding the workshop. So thank you to all three people who've featured on this show, all creating beautiful artwork, really. I will put the links up to all of their work on the show page, which is on radioreverb.com, and then search for shows and find Growing Wild in the drop-down list. You can also find me on Instagram and Twitter at growingwildfm. You can also email growingwildreverb@gmail.com. I'm going to play you out with a song, and it's going to be Fleetwood Mac, You Can Go Your Own Way. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next month. Until then, go well. And as Jen casually mentioned in that last interview, all paths do lead to somewhere.